Oral questions by members.
Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, British Columbians are already paying the highest gas prices and the highest gas taxes in North America. The NDP have more than doubled the carbon tax, and on April 1st, the Premier plans to hike it by 23%, a cruel April Fool's joke on the public. And while the BC United Opposition has repeatedly called for slashing the tax, this NDP Premier wants to hike the carbon tax yet again. So my question to the Premier, with British Columbians struggling to eat, heat, and house themselves, will this Premier spike the hike and cancel the planned 23% carbon tax hike on April the 1st?
Minister of Environment and Climate Change Strategy.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And we know that British Columbians are struggling with inflation, with the high cost of living, and that's why we're taking many measures across many opportunities to support British Columbia families. British Columbia families are also deeply concerned about the impacts of climate change on their kids, on their grandkids, on the economy, on communities that face wildfires and floods, and they want to be assured that we're taking strong climate action. They want to do their part. And that's why we've structured the carbon tax in a way that returns money to low and middle income British Columbians, which of course would not happen if we ceased the carbon tax. What we do with the increases in the carbon tax is give 100% of it back to British Columbians in the carbon climate action tax credit.
Leader of the Official Opposition, supplemental.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, Mr. Speaker, the fact is you can't tax your way to affordability, right, like this NDP government keeps trying to do. By every measure, life is more expensive under this Premier and the NDP, including grocery costs that are up 30%, visits to the food bank up 60% since they have been in power. Never before in the history of this province have so many people had to resort to using food banks. So again, to the Premier and this government, will they spike the tax hike and cancel the NDP's 23% carbon tax increase on April 1st? Yes or no?
Minister of Environment.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. What the Leader of the Opposition forgets, apparently, is that one point he said his proudest moment in government was introducing the carbon tax. But maybe...
Members.
Maybe what he really meant when he said that...
Members. Minister.
Maybe what the Leader of the Official Opposition really meant by his proudest moment was when he used the carbon tax to give a $450 million tax cut to big business and the richest British Columbians. Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we've doubled the portion of the carbon tax going back to British Columbians in the climate action tax credit for low and middle income British Columbians. That's what we're doing for British Columbians, along with cutting ICBC rates, along with taking tolls of bridges, along with eliminating MSP premiums, all of which have been opposed by the opposition.
Member for Kamloops North Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Let's remember that when the government changed, the first thing they did was remove revenue neutrality from the carbon tax and lifted the freeze at $30 a ton, which will now be $50 increase, which is a more than doubling of the carbon tax, actually. So, Mr. Speaker, let's be clear that a single mom in British Columbia pays far more in carbon taxes than they get back. And in fact, an average BC family pays nearly $1,200 more in carbon taxes net than they do next door in Alberta. On April 1st, the cost of filling up at a gas station will rise again by 23% under this premier. Will the NDP premier spike the carbon tax hike on April 1st and give British Columbians the relief they need?
Minister of Environment.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Let me help the member opposite with a quote from his leader on September 23, 2023, and it goes like this. When we introduced North America's first revenue-neutral carbon tax back in 2008, if my memory serves me correctly, I was very proud to be part of the government that did that, because what we said was we were going to put a carbon tax on emissions because that's the market way to deal with something. If you want people to change behavior, you put a cost to it and you ask them to consider shifting their behavior. The difference, Mr. Speaker, between this government and their government is we take the carbon tax money and we give it back to British Columbians at twice the rate that they did. Honourable Speaker.
Members.
I'm sure British Columbians will notice, Honourable Speaker.
Members.
I'm sure British Columbians will notice that the members opposite think it's a laughing matter to give money back to British Columbians instead of to corporations.
Member for Cambridge North Thompson, supplemental.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, the difference is BC United will actually give real tax relief to British Columbians. We'll eliminate the provincial fuel tax, and we'll spike the Premier's plan carbon tax hikes, Mr. Speaker. You know, this Premier's double standards knows no bounds. The Minister talks about breaks for large industrial emitters, $450 million. He seems to forget he was the minister that signed off on an agreement with LNG Canada to give them a $600 million PST holiday. Does the Minister of Environment not remember signing that deal with LNG?
$600 million.
And Mr. Speaker, let's look at how this
government deals with... Let's hear the question, please.
With
members. Members.
Let's look at how this government, this premier, deals with large industrial emitters. While they are insisting that British Columbians in their average households pay $80 a ton for carbon tax, this premier is actually giving large industrial operations a break from paying any carbon tax. BC United thinks maybe regular British Columbians should get a bit of a break, just like the large industrial emitters that this environment minister seems to want to give a break. So if you heat your home with natural gas, the premier is going to jack up your bill by 23% as well on April 1st. It's time, when life has never been more expensive, that this premier spike the tax hike on April 1st and give British Columbians the same type of break they're willing to give large industrial emitters in this province.
Minister of Environment.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I'm proud, as everyone in our government is proud, that we introduced a new output-based pricing system for large industrial emitters that sends an adequate price signal while maintaining competitiveness. And the result of that is it's been praised by industry and it's been praised by climate activists.
Members, it's good to enjoy the question period. It's wonderful, but we still have to go through it. Okay, let's hear the answer.
Honourable Speaker, we continue to take measures to support British Columbians every day, whether it's the BC Family Benefit, whether it is reducing and holding steady BC Hydro rates, whether it's reducing ICBC rates, whether it's supporting people to make the shift to electric heat pumps to have homes that are more comfortable and cost less in energy, and whether it is giving 100% of the increase in the carbon tax back to low and middle income British Columbians. Honourable Speaker, it's unfortunate, Honourable Speaker, that the Leader of the Opposition and the members opposite are willing to mortgage their kids' and their grandkids' future in the
members.
Face of climate change, instead of giving families in British Columbia support in so many ways.
Members.
We have lowered taxes.
Members. We have lots of questions, more members. Just take it easy. Minister will conclude.
Let's just leave it at this, Mr. Speaker. A family with two kids earning $100,000 pays over a third less in provincial taxes than they did when those members were on the side of the House.
House Leader of the Third Party.
Yeah, Mr. Speaker, hydropower is central to meeting our Clean BC targets, but the electricity source is threatened by drought, Mr. Speaker. Last year, dams were at historic lows due to sustained periods of drought. BC was importing 20% of our electricity, Mr. Speaker. From what we've heard, the delay of flooding Site C wasn't because of bear dens, but it was because of drought. There isn't enough water, Mr. Speaker. Relying on hydro to meet our net zero emissions objectives is risky in a fast-changing climate. Conserving energy for British Columbians should be this government's top priority, not powering LNG facilities. To the Minister of Energy, why is she prioritizing limited electricity for nascent fracked gas industry in a climate emergency?
Minister of Energy and Mines.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Well, of course, you know, we've just heard a series of questions around the fact that our communities and people are facing climate challenges unlike at any time before. People are concerned, they want to take action, and they want to do the right thing. Drought has impacted BC Hydro's reservoirs, but over the past 15 years, BC Hydro has been a net importer half of the time, a net exporter of energy the other half of the time. It's incredibly important that we build the resilience of this system. We're so fortunate to have a backbone of a resilient hydroelectric system that we will be diversifying by adding in renewables with a call for power this spring to see more energy added to the grid to help people make the switch to electric vehicles, the switch to electric heat pumps, electrifying industry, bringing down our emissions. Mr. Speaker, we're going to stay focused on that work with BC Hydro, seeing the Utilities Commission just approve their 20-year integrated resource plan, and knowing that we're planning for the future, planning for climate change, building up a resilient system to support people.
Third Party House Leader Supplemental.
Drought also impacts fracking in the Northeast, Mr. Speaker. The BC Energy Regulator has warned that the Premier's fracking buddies, that there's going to be a limited water supply this summer. Frackers use billions of litres of water each year, 5.2 billion in 2021 to be exact. If they're not hijacking it from creeks and streams, Mr. Speaker, they're paying pennies for it. And while the Premier publicly hallucinates about a net zero LNG industry, that's just the greenhouse gas emissions and not the only environmental issue, Mr. Speaker. More LNG means more fracking and tens of billions of more liters of fresh water. We are truly a company town, Mr. Speaker, diverting limited water to increase corporate profits while the climate readiness minister pleads with British Columbians to take shorter showers and the parliamentary secretary on watersheds desperately trying to save dying salmon. Friends, we have a water crisis in this government's grip.
Members.
With phantasmagoria. My question is to the Energy Minister. When is she and her colleagues concerned about a livable planet going to stand up to this madness?
Minister of Energy and Mines.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Well, once again, you know, the member raises some very serious issues around drought and the steps that our government is taking to help prepare for what could be a very difficult summer. The BC Energy Regulator has already issued notice to gas operations in the Northeast to reduce or, in some cases, eliminate their water use. Industry takes this very seriously, and they're taking the action that's necessary. Mr. Speaker, my colleague, the Minister of Water, Lands and Resource Stewardship, of course, is leading the work, too, on planning for the future, undertaking water licensing decisions, and making decisions together with First Nations communities and industry so that we can accommodate the changes that we're seeing. Mr. Speaker, we're going to continue to do this. We're going to continue to put people first, supporting them with affordable hydro rates, supporting them with affordability altogether in their lives, making good decisions because we know that people want to take action on climate. They want to see responsible industry. That's what's taking place here. We're going to stay focused on it. Thank you.
Fourth Party House Leader.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. You know, April 1st is just around the corner. And I would warn the people at home, do not be fooled. Do not make the joke on you. We have the Leader of the Opposition that it's his proudest moment to bring in the carbon tax. And then we have a party over here that is proud to raise it. There's only one party in this House that's willing to axe and spike the tax, and that's the Conservative Party of British Columbia.
Members.
Mr. Speaker, this past week we've seen a movement of premiers across this country uniting together to fight for Canadians who can no longer afford this punishing carbon tax. Seven premiers have now signed letters calling on Justin Trudeau to axe and spike the tax. Mr. Speaker,
Members,
BC is a holdout on this great Canadian story. And there is a pattern of stubbornness by this premier here in BC. We're the only province that refuses to hire back nurses than doctors that we desperately need. This BC NDP
members,
premier
let's listen
wants
to question, please.
To burden
question.
Every day, hardworking British Columbians
it's
with this
loud.
Punishing, cruel carbon tax. My question, Mr. Speaker, to the BC Premier, will you finally do right by hardworking British Columbians, make life more affordable by spiking and hacking and axing this hard carbon tax?
Minister of Environment.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And at least the fourth party is consistent. Their leader doesn't believe that climate change is a crisis, or perhaps that it may not be caused by human and industrial activity. We believe differently, and we're backed up by virtually 98% of scientists around the world. Unfortunately, the official opposition, in their race to win back votes from the Conservatives, is abandoning any pretense of taking action on climate change. Honourable Speaker, our Premier has been absolutely clear. British Columbia is going to stay on track with our Clean BC plan, which includes the carbon tax and which includes substantial rebates to British Columbians, including 100% of the increase going back as part of the Climate Action Tax Credit, along with a host of other supports that we have offered British Columbians for the last 7 years.
Fourth Party House Leader.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. The only thing that this government is on track is driving hardworking British Columbians into the poorhouse. Mr. Speaker, this carbon tax was introduced by the leader of BC United, although they'll probably go on to and try to deny that on Chinese social media. But now, Premier Eby, Socialist NDP are making it worse by increasing it. Mr. Speaker, British Columbians are hurting. They're having a tough time putting food on the table. This NDP Liberal carbon tax doesn't make just fuel more expensive. It makes everything more expensive. It adds to the cost of gas, groceries, heating, food, rent, and even furniture more expensive. That's why the Conservative Party of BC is calling on this NDP Premier to read the room and do right by hard-working British Columbians by axing the tax and spiking the hike. Mr. Speaker.
Question.
To the Minister of Poverty Reduction, how many British Columbians have to be taxed into abject poverty before this government ends the BC carbon tax once and for all?
Minister of Environment.
Honourable Speaker,
we understand that British Columbians are hurting, and we understand that British Columbians needed support from day one in 2017. That's why we took tolls off the bridges. That's why we cut ICBC rates. That's why we eliminated the medical services plan premium, the largest middle-class tax cut in British Columbia history. That's why we've reduced taxes by more than a third for families making $100,000 a year. That's why we give the BC Family Benefit. That's why we give climate action tax credit. That's why we have a whole host of measures that support British Columbians in their day-to-day lives every single day, and we are not going to stop doing that.
Member for Abbotsford West.
Horrific emergency room wait times. Delays in cancer care that are, quite frankly, costing people their lives. Ambulances that take hours upon hours to get to seriously injured people. More and more families left without a family physician. Every time the health minister is confronted by the deplorable and worsening state of BC's healthcare system, he does two things. First of all, he denies there's a problem. And secondly, he points to mythical budget cuts to healthcare under the previous government. Mr. Speaker, for the record,
let's hear the question, members. Thank you, members. Members?
Between 2001 and 2017, the healthcare budget doubled from $10 billion to $20 billion, Mr. Speaker. It went up every single year. Quite frankly, I'm getting tired of the health minister manufacturing phony facts to explain away the deplorable state of health care that has been created under his watch and this government's watch. The only actual budget cut this minister needs to explain is the one that he and his ministry signed off on to cut funding to BC's retinal specialists by 32%, Mr. Speaker, and as a result, 25,000 British Columbians are in jeopardy of being impacted by this cut. Will the minister confirm that it was his ministry that signed off and on a unilaterally imposed 32% cut to the retinal specialists in British Columbia, and that as a result, they are withdrawing from a program which will mean that British Columbian patients, 25,000 of them, will be obliged to pay for that service if they want to get it.
Minister of Health.
Well, thank you very much, Honourable Speaker. And I would say, first of all, that in terms of nursing, we added 6,500 nurses in BC last year. These are numbers from the college, Honourable Speaker. First year, the Leader of the Opposition was Minister of Health. The year started with 42,122 registered nurses in BC. It ended with 40,712. Then it went down to 40,149. The only health minister in history to cut registered nurses in British Columbia. Now, Honourable Speaker.
Members.
Now, Honourable Speaker. The ophthalmological division of the doctors of BC has made proposals to change tariffs. This is not a cut in the resources being assigned, not $1, Honourable Speaker. The member will know that retinal surgeons, and this is the issue that the doctors of BC have been raising for some time, on average, bill to MSP $2.8 million a year per, right? That's the average amount. And so the ophthalmological division has made a proposal to bring changes. It's our intention to continue. These services are free to British Columbians. They'll continue to be free to British Columbians. And of course, we're working with specialists and with ophthalmologists in BC to ensure that BC continues to have these services provided for people. That's not going to change. It's not going to change before April 1st. It's not going to change after April 1st. We're determined to do this. And I think the actions of the doctors of BC are reasonable actions, and we're working with them and with all doctors in BC to make sure that people keep getting access to services, and they will.
Absol West, supplemental.
Mr. Speaker, the minister wants to avoid one inconvenient fact and is wrong on a second fact. He wants to ignore the fact that the 32% cut to the retinal specialists could not and would not have been made. That proposal to the Tariff Commission could not and would not have been made without the acquiescence of he and his ministry, Mr. Speaker. That's the first thing. The second thing he wants to try and pretend in the House today is that it'll be business as usual after March the 31st. His ministry sent a letter, Mr. Speaker, to those retinal specialists asking how many of them would continue in the program to allow for business to continue as usual. Not one of them has agreed, Mr. Speaker, to do that in the face of that 32% cut. As a result, there is nothing this minister can do to control the behavior of those doctors once they have withdrawn from the program, and that is scheduled to happen in 2 weeks. When that happens, Mr. Speaker, patients will be obliged to write checks, which is not something they've had to do for many, many years, in order to receive treatment that will prevent them from going blind. The minister has it within his control to address this issue, to reverse a 32% cut that was instituted under his watch. Will he do that?
Minister of Health.
Honourable Speaker, we're acting in the interests of BC patients. That's what this is about. As, by the way, our BC doctors, Honourable Speaker, in addressing these issues. Of course, we're working with all the parties to ensure, Honourable Speaker, that British Columbians are not affected. That's the role of the Ministry of Health and the Minister of Health. But I would say this, Honourable Speaker, that in this case, as the member will know, this is not a 32% cut. There's not a single thing being cut from this budget. This is a discussion of tariffs, and the member will know, $2.8 million, the median income on MSP, Honourable Speaker. In other words, Honourable Speaker, average income is the equivalent of six oncologists, Honourable Speaker, right? For each one. And so there is a discussion, a legitimate discussion, around payment, which is going on in BC. And we're taking action, working with the whole community of people who are ophthalmologists in BC to ensure that British Columbians continue to get the free service they deserve, and they will.
Member for Prince George, Wilmount.
Thank you very much. For over a week, this premier has been missing in action when it comes to investigating anti-Semitism in his own government, caucus, and party. Even his own head of anti-racism has a history of anti-Semitism. And now there are painful stories of anti-Semitism in the healthcare system. And I quote, a faculty member at my hospital asked me to prove that October 7th massacre actually happened. They harassed and intimidated me. They made me feel fearful and anxious to come to work at the hospital. When it came to anti-Indigenous racism in the healthcare system, an independent investigation was called quickly and correctly. But the premier is now missing in action. How can Jewish people feel safe in our healthcare system while the premier refuses to call an independent investigation into anti-Semitism in his own caucus, party, and government?
Gummard House Leader.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker. And the member is correct. We have been canvassing this issue this week. We have answered the questions the members asked, which is everybody in this House is committed to addressing anti-Semitism, hate of any form in our province. We know there's fear in the community. We understand that. The Premier met with leaders from the Jewish community last week. He's meeting with leaders of the Jewish community this week. Since October 7th, Honourable Speaker, we have taken steps to ensure that the community has more supports. But we know there's more work to do. That's why the Premier is going to continue to meet with leaders in the coming days. Honourable Speaker, I think it's upon all of us to ensure that everyone, no matter who they love, no matter where they come from, no matter what their religion, feels safe and welcome to British Columbia. That's something we've been committed to since we formed government, and something we're committed to do every single day going forward.
Prince George Railmount, supplemental.
Well, in fact, what the minister said is incorrect. The Premier has not agreed to do everything he needs to do to deal with anti-Semitism, because he isn't even willing to deal with it in his own caucus. The Premier's unwilling to fight anti-Semitism in the public service, apparently, whose stories we have heard. He's apparently unwilling to fight anti-Semitism in our K-12 and post-secondary education system. And now we have horrible stories of what's happening in healthcare, and the Premier's unwilling to fight anti-Semitism in the healthcare system. And the most shocking thing of all is that the Premier is unwilling to fight anti-Semitism with his own hand-picked Assistant Deputy Minister for Anti-Racism. It is unbelievable that someone who blamed Jews for losing her dream job, that is unbelievable that she should be in the public service, much less having an anti-racism role and providing advice to this government and this Premier. British Columbians want this Premier to do the right thing. That starts with looking in the mirror, dealing with the issues that we have heard about in this House day after day after day. Perhaps the Minister can tell us this. Why is the Premier stubbornly refusing to call an independent investigation into something as horrifying as the stories we hear day after day after day? So will he do the right thing and call an independent investigation today?
Government House Leader.
Honourable Speaker, since October 7th, we have been taking considerable steps to ensure people can feel safe in communities. October 30th, we launched the mandatory Holocaust education in our schools. The Premier in this building made a Premier statement about the rise of anti-Semitism. November 15th, we've provided additional security funding for communities to make sure that they feel safe in the place that they worship. February 16th this year, the BC Prosecution Service updated their hate crime policy so we can prosecute those that come forward, cases that come forward where they're perpetrating hate in our communities. Mr. Speaker, we take all forms of hate very seriously. And I'll reiterate this. It doesn't matter who you love. It doesn't matter what you believe, where you come from, what your religion, everyone should feel safe in British Columbia. That's something we've been committed to since we formed government, and it's something we're committed to going forward.
The bell ends the question period. Madam Clerk.